Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, focused on making holiday hosting effortless with party trays, cookies, and holiday favorites. Harmon's for the holidays.
The writer Florence Knapp's debut novel came out this year. It's a story about life and fate and the consequences of choices. It's called The Names. Anne Holman is one of the co-owners of the King's English Bookshop, and it's one of her favorite books of the year.
It's the whole idea behind what's in a name, right? And when you name a baby, what happens to that baby? Do they become their name, or are they able to overcome it? So what happens in the book is, in Great Britain, you go to a registrar's office to name your baby. And Cora, the mom, is about to go do that with her little girl. And she's thinking about what she's going to name the baby. And the little girl, Maya, wants to name him Bear. She wants to name him Julian. Her husband is pretty awful and is assuming that she's going to name the baby Gordon, which is the family name. What happens if she doesn't, though? What happens if she names the baby Bear?
Cora watches as the letters form, each one emerging like some magical and extraordinary thing from the nib of the registrar's pen as it moves across the page.
So in the book, she does do this three times. What happens if he was named Bear? What happens if his name was Julian? And what happens if his name was Gordon?
Bear. Just four letters. B-E-A-R. But each one feels charged. No longer just consonants and vowels. A great surge of, what is this thing? Joy? Yes, that's it. Joy courses through Cora's being. As the registrar hands Cora the certificate, she tells her she's been doing this job for 22 years and has never had a bear before. She cranes over the desk and looks into his pram. But it's just perfect for you, isn't it?
Naming the baby Bear, first of all, it's wildly, you know, outside the norm. And so that's a big step on her part. And then in the second story, she just loves the name Julian. But still, it's a big step. And then in the third story, when she goes ahead and names the baby Gordon, you see just the terrible consequences of her not standing up for herself. So it's a sad story about abuse in a relationship, but it's also what happens when you take control and say, no, I'm going to do this instead.
That's Anne Holman. You heard the actor Dervla Kirwan reading from Florence Knapp's novel, The Names. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. This is our annual holiday book show. We have with us a group of book experts. They're booksellers who have a list of ideas for the gift-giving season. We'll have with us through the hour Ken Sanders of Ken Sanders Rare Books, Catherine Weller from Weller Bookworks, and a new voice, the one you just heard, Anne Holman, who has replaced Betsy Burton. I want to begin by, let's point out the obvious. One of our longtime guests, book experts, Betsy Burton, is not with us in the studio. She's had enough. wanted to, you know, give someone else a chance or whatever it is.
To be fair, she's also retired.
Yes. And I just wanted to sort of begin by acknowledging her absence and say that we're going to miss her.
We love you, Betsy.
Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I was going to say, and the voice you're hearing there is, of course, Anne Holman from the King's English. And yes, you are here to fill in. And so welcome to you. We just wanted to say that as
Thank
well.
You. Thank
Yay,
you for having
welcome,
me.
Welcome, Anne.
Thank you.
Yay. I think I've known Anne as long as you've been a bookseller.
I feel like I'm new at this still when I sit between these two people.
Well, you'll get the hang of it, so welcome. Let's start. I guess I wanted to begin, as I often do, as you're seeing people come in to buy books for the season, or you can even cast back a little before that as well, what are you noticing? What are people buying right now, and what do you make of it?
Oh, boy. It's all over the place right now. It's really interesting. I've been fascinated by this season because I'm not seeing one or two gigantic books like we often see this time of year. There's a good even spread across, but We're still seeing people interested in alternate political structures, some current events, lots of history, excuse me, and a whole lot of self-help and coping strategies,
okay,
for lack of a better word. In addition to the usual stuff, let's make our homes cozy. Let's make our lives better because everything's out of control moments.
It is what it is. Let's cope with it.
Sci-fi fantasy. Horror romance cannot be stopped.
Wow.
The genres are, this is a moment for genres.
Yeah, wow. A kind of escapism?
Maybe. Yeah. Sci-fi fantasy has always dealt with social issues. Way back, and they still are. Even the cozy fantasies are dealing with issues.
And what are you noticing at the store?
Well, I have a new word for you, actually. I thought the new word was going to be romanticy. And I'll try and do justice to this. It's horromance.
Yes.
Oh.
So horror and romance mixed together. I agree with what Catherine's saying, though. We're selling a ton of sci-fi, and there's so many political underpinnings and so much of this idea of what's right and what's wrong and who's good and who's evil and how complicated we all are and how some of the things that are complicated in our world right now don't really have to be. So that's been really interesting. And our demographic's gotten a lot younger, and they're very opinionated.
I didn't think young people read. Come on.
Oh, well, they do.
They do.
I mean, I live in a bubble. I'll give you that. But there's a lot of young people reading.
Ken?
It's not that dystopian books ever went away, but they're back with a vengeance. Huh. The world is in flux. It's in change. It's in chaos. Our country is the same. Our personal lives are the same. Just speaking for myself, my shop, this whole Leo Museum that I moved into at Library Square is now gone, dissolved, kaput, and I'm in limbo. You know, I must say the city and Mayor Mendenhall are being very, very nice to me. I'm learning there are far more city workers than I ever imagined in my wildest dreams, and I get to talk to almost every one of them to decide my future. So I'm in limbo, but for me, limbo's a good place. People, all the things that Kat and Ann said, yes, comfort books, how-to books, how to figure out our world, how to figure out our own lives, and I think especially how, despite our differences, to put up with each other. I don't say we have to like each other, but could we figure out nicer ways of dialogue than is being set by the White House right now, please?
Okay. All right. Well, lots to talk about. Let's jump in. Let's begin with Catherine.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with a book that describes worlds in collision. It's called The Wayfinder by Adam Johnson. Adam Johnson wrote many, many years ago The Orphan Master's Son, and he is back with a book that is, 700 pages. It's a big, epic novel set about 1,000 years ago, at least, in the Tongan Samoan Islands, that Pacific Island area.
Yeah.
And it's a tale of two islands and two different cultures. There is the island that has had resources overused. They're now doing population control because they are running out of assets. But they can't quite get themselves off that island. And by assets, I mean food, clothes, everything they need to survive. One day washing up on their island is the other part of the story. The people from the Royal Island in Tonga, and they are the sons of the Tongan king. And they're out exploring the islands for other reasons. And what we have is a very peaceful island that knows how to come to consensus, discuss things. The island is out of resources. And then this Tongan island, which is at perpetual war to ensure security. And the way these two stories weave together and the way Adam Johnson weaves this big, fascinating narrative of sailing through the islands with just enough magic in it to make it really interesting. Souls go into coconuts. I won't say any more.
Wow.
It's fantastic. It will sweep you away and keep you busy on a hot day when I read it, or on a cold winter day. It's The Wayfinder by Adam Johnson.
Great.
Next is Trip by Amy Barradale. Trip is what happens in this novel to both of the main characters, and it is the name of one of the main characters. There's a small family whose son Trip isn't fitting in. He's probably autistic. He needs to be disciplined, his school says, so they send him to a wilderness camp. At the same time, his mom goes to Nepal to work on a film project, steps on a hairbrush in her room, slips and hits her head and dies. Boom, she's dead. And then she's in the Bardo, the Tibetan Bardos. And the great thing about being in the Bardos is you can just kind of float around. So she finds her son, who has escaped from the school, is off with this crazy drug-using alcoholic who has stolen the ship, and they are at sea, literally at sea, on a boat whose battery dies, and she's trying to help him get back before she goes on to her next life. It is unhinged, and it is so well done in that. It's fantastic. It's called Trip by Amy Barradale.
Wow.
Bog Queen by Anna North is narrated by, has three main narrators. There is the Iron Age druid, who in this case is a young woman. There is the archaeologist who is called into this peat bog site to investigate the appearance of a body. And there is the peat bog itself, which is also a narrator.
Wow.
These three stories interweave natural history, the murder mystery, and history of the druids in the Iron Age. It is another book that will sweep you away. It's so good. Bog Queen by Anna North. Very quickly, Olga Tokarczuk, winner of the Nobel Prize, has a new book, House of Day, House of Night. Also very strange and also worth reading.
Great. Perfect. Kat, thanks very much. Anne. Over to you.
Okay, I'm going to start out with a local twofer from Torrey House Press. Karen Anderson is a professor emeritus at Utah University, and her first book was What Falls Away. And it's the story of a woman who is born and raised in a small town sort of near Provo. As the book opens, she's coming home because her brothers have kind of called her and said, our mom has Alzheimer's, you have to come home. She hasn't been home in 40 years. And she does come home, and she reconnects with a few people, and it's a story of what happens. You know, can you come home? Can you come home if you were raised as an LDS person and you're not anymore? Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful story. And then she wrote a second book, and this is the story of what happens to the first character's son that she gave up for adoption. He's adopted by a family down in Moab, Green River, grows up, marries a Native American woman, and to people who live in Utah, the scenery, the storytelling, the people, the places, it's so good and it's so meaningful. I love Karen. I'm going to read anything she ever writes. Things I Didn't Do and What Falls Away by Karen Anderson. Mm. And those are from Torrey House Press. And then Wendell Berry has a new one. I know Ken will be wanting to say this one too, but it's Marsh Catlett, The Force of a Story. And we're back in Port William, and we're hearing the story of Marsh, who is Andy Catlett's grandfather. He's harvested his tobacco, and he's going to take it to market, and it's the story of how badly these people that grow this tobacco get ripped off. And the other thing that's wonderful in this book is there's a family tree. So if you've been reading the Port William books for a long time, you can look at this family tree and see where they all come from. Love, love, love those.
Great, Wendell Berry.
That's
what's the name?
Marsh Catlett, yeah. The Force of a Story by Wendell Berry. And then Old School Indian is a novel by Aaron John Curtis, who is a bookseller at Books and Books in Miami. So he's a friend. This is his first novel. It's about a young kid who goes off to the university in Syracuse, which is near his where he's from. And years later, he's sick. He's living in Miami with his girlfriend, who's kind of a terrible person. He goes back home because his grandfather is a healer. Mm-hmm. And he knows there's something seriously wrong with him, and but modern medicine can't heal him. So he goes back to the family on the reservation, and it's the story of being healed and also kind of finding who you are. The other thing that's throughout this book, though, is amazing poetry that Aaron's written. And the poet is kind of another character who's talking to you kind of as the narrator. Trigger warning, there's a lot of crazy sex in here, so it might not be for everybody, but I loved it. That kind of came out kind of funny, didn't it? anyway, it's a great
nothing wrong with that.
That's Old School Indian by Aaron John Curtis. He's a terrifically talented writer. I think we're going to see more for him. And then I wanted to just mention Porter Beck. The Porter Beck Mysteries are by Bruce Burgos. This is the third one he's written. It's called The Blue Horse. But for those of you that love Western mysteries and maybe love Craig Johnson, this is a new series, and it's a sheriff in Nevada. He's actually in the largest county in Nevada, and he has not enough staff. He's got an Indian reservation, and it's also where Area 51 is found. And so in the first book, everything is set in motion, and you meet all these characters, and you get to know them. And it's like a Craig Johnson book. You just want to keep drinking more. So this is called The Blue Horse by Bruce Burgos. It's the third, but they're all about Porter Beck, who is the sheriff in that Nevada county.
Terrific. Thank you, Anne. All right, Ken Sanders.
Margaret Atwood has a new book out, Book of Lives, a memoir of sorts, with a delightful cover that y'all can't see. She's looking very Handmaid's Tale-ish there. I don't know a lot about Margaret Atwood. As much as I admire her works and have read a lot of her, I don't know much about her life. So I'm starting to learn about her lives, that Cat's Eye and Handmaid's Tales came directly from her own life is what started both of those books. Isabel Allende, everybody's favorite also, has a new historical novel set down in South America. My name is Emilia del Valle.
Valle. Mm-hmm. Valle. Mm-hmm.
These are two of the most remarkable women writers I think we have right now.
Yeah. And let's say the name of that again. Sorry. I know you struggled, but Isabel, that's okay.
My name is Emilia del Valle.
Great.
Hopefully I got that right. Now I got it. I'll try and be really quick. We all know Frankenstein. You know, it's good Lord Almighty. It's 200 plus years old. I was at a book fair 3 or 4 years ago, and my assistant was selling a book to a man I didn't know. So I start chatting him up while he's waiting to get packaged. And we get off on 30 minutes worth of stories and tales, and they involve Ray Harryhausen. And I tell him, well, my friend Jenkins Powell, I rode the Harryhausen family down Cataract Canyon. I know Ray Harryhausen. He was a good friend of mine. And then, well, my friend Jenkins got commissioned. He did these four incredible stained glass windows for his cast. And he interrupts me. He says, I know those windows. They're magnificent. Well, duh. He says, you must come to my museum. I will take you on a personal tour. And I hand him a piece of paper. Could you write your name and address down? And he hands me the paper back. I have been talking to Guillermo del Toro for 30 minutes. It's crazy. And now he has out a Frankenstein, a trade edition, a Frankenstein, a limited edition portfolio, and a Frankenstein. I couldn't bring them all here.
Well, explain what it is. This
is a book from the movie.
Yes.
And it's this incredible book on all of his makings of them. And it's got 50-some-odd weird – this is like a nightmare book. It's got inserts and foldouts. And to buy – this is a technical production. Mm. And then here's his own – I don't know how old this journal is, of all of his drawings. And he's been – this is his lifelong passion project to make Frankenstein into a movie. It comes in a box with a 14-inch statue and all this other stuff. I don't have time to tell you. There's three different editions of it. It's his lifetime masterpiece.
Can you buy them separately?
Yes. There's trade edition, $75, portfolio edition, and then – the $1,000 edition that weighs 31 pounds and has a 16-inch statue.
All right. Ken Sanders of Ken Sanders Rare Books. We also have with us Catherine Weller of Weller Bookworks and Anne Holman, one of the owners of the King's English Bookshop. We have a list of all of these titles and the ones we didn't get to on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, focused on making holiday hosting effortless with party trays, cookies, and holiday favorites. Harmon's for the holidays.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, it's our annual holiday book show where we've gathered some book experts to offer ideas for the gift-giving time of year. We have with us Anne Holman, a co-owner of the King's English Bookshop, Catherine Weller of Weller Bookworks, and Ken Sanders of Ken Sanders Rare Books. And if you're familiar with these book shows, you know we can always count on some unconventional ideas from Ken. And sure enough, one of the books he's recommending this year is an art book by a brilliant but tortured painter named Carl Nicolaysen.
He had a promising career in art that was destroyed by alcoholism, madness, and homelessness. He destroyed his own life. He destroyed his marriage, his relationship with his son, and pretty much every friend he had. But I felt that I need to take up this quest to give Carl Nicolaysen his artistic due. He could imitate and draw from any living artist, from great Renaissance painters, Rembrandt, etc., to Impressionists, to Monet, to Manet, to anyone. You can see it in his painting. I wonder if this man couldn't have had an extraordinary life as a forger. Because this is a radio show, I can't show you this extraordinary palette that this man had. But this sums up the artist's life, I hope, for you and for me. January 17th, 2005. 3 days without cigarettes. Spent part of the day going through the trash for old buds. Managed to find enough loose tobacco and empty boxes to make a couple of roll your owns. Use some tissue paper from a box of charcoal sticks. Where did my life go? I have 81 cents. No food, no gas, no prospects. I miss my life. I hear, I feel Carl Nicolaysen's pain. Was it self-inflicted? Well, yeah, awful lot of it was, but especially in the chaotic world we're living in right now, the chaotic country, our chaotic lives. Here's a man who's self-destructive or not, and I admit he was. He needed help, and he never got it.
The book is Carl Nicolaysen. He was an artist. Okay, on to round two. And back to Ken Sanders.
On the Overland Trails with William Clark, a Teamsters Utah War, 1857 and 1858, edited by William McKinnon and Kenneth Alford. This deals with all the trails, but primarily with the Utah Expedition, events of the Utah War, and also addresses hugely reasons behind. In fact, it has the Mountain Meadow Massacre on the cover. Who knew 5,000 federal troops invaded Great Salt Lake City? Another great historical book on Utah and the Mormons from our friends at Signature Books.
Say the name again.
On the Overland Trails with William Clark, Teamsters Utah War, 1857-58. Briefly, here's a new book about Wallace Stegner, well, by Alex Bean. Now, personally, Doug, I don't really need to read another book about Wallace Stegner. And I've read all the books by him, even his bad ones. But why bring this up? Because he deals in one chapter that Wallace Stegner has been accused of being a plagiarist from plagiarizing the diaries and journals of a rather obscure late 19th, early 20th century writer named Mary Halleck Foote. In this chapter in the book, and this woman that broke the story said, Stegner stole everything.
And you're here to defend Wallace Stegner.
He's not around to defend himself. I knew Wallace Stegner. Well, it's...
You're living in his house.
Well, that's since been disproved.
Okay,
all
right. I shouldn't have mentioned that.
That crushed me, actually.
Yeah. All right, keep going. Sorry.
Her granddaughter gave him absolute permission to do whatever he wished with it and wished him well. Stegner writes back, "As I warned you, the process of making a novel from real people has led me to bend them where I had to, and you may not recognize your ancestors when I get through with them." Then he adds, "I have availed myself of your invitation to use the letters and reminisces as I pleased." And so there are passages from both in my novel, stolen outright. Stegner's words. He stole it with permission of the family. And I'm just going to leave it at that. I don't believe Wallace Stegner was a plagiarist.
All right, Ken Sanders, thanks very much. Catherine Weller, over to you.
Okay, I've got a stack of things about different kinds of artists. First is Night People, How to Be a DJ in 90s New York City by Mark Ronson. Now, Mark Ronson, before he produced people like Amy Winehouse and Bruno Mars, was, of course, because this is the fly path for this kind of person, a DJ in New York in the 90s, in the era before it was cleaned up by Giuliani. And this book is so interesting because it's not just about New York City and the club scene in the 90s, although that's a lot of it. There are a lot of name drops in here, a lot of really interesting little factoids about clubs that came and went at the time. But it is, first and foremost, a book about a person who lives, eats, and breathes music, how they think about it, how they approach it, what it brings to their life. And Honestly, I wish this book had more of a discography in it, because he's reading this made me go back and listen to a lot of things that I didn't hear at the time. He is self-effacing. He admits to terrible mistakes he's made. He's very humble about it. It's a very personal and lovely little memoir, and just dynamite for if you like music. Night People by Mark Ronson. Yeah. Another musician, Patti Smith, has another book out called Bread of Angels. This is a memoir as well. It is about her life beginning in roughly her teenage years up into pretty contemporaneous times. She does skim over the part of her life that she dealt with when she wrote, oh, Lord, her previous memoir.
Just Kids.
Thank you, and Just Kids. There's not a lot of rehashing of that, but there are lovely passages about her making a life with her husband, Fred Smith, and becoming an artist and what it is to be an artist. And the magic that is the brain that is Patti Smith's is just, I never get tired of delving into it and reading about it. I know, Ken, once you said there are no good books by musicians. Patti Smith writes a good book.
I count her as an exception.
She is an exception. So, Bread of Angels, hot off the press. Next is a biography about Octavia Butler by Susanna M. Morris called Positive Obsession. This is fantastic. Octavia Butler has been having a moment. I don't have to tell the other booksellers about this. Her biggest book, Parable of the Sower, was set in 2024 and described, it's shockingly prescient. Many details of it. It's just like, oh, whoa, how did you know? But she, for those who don't know, is one of the founding mothers of modern science fiction. She is a black woman who worked like hell to write. She grew up in poverty. She would write for hours around her other jobs. She worked and worked and worked, trying to push different visions of the world, different stories, different ways of being, and different people into our lenses. And the writer, Susanna Morris, who does a lot of biographies, has done her justice in this biography. It's lovely. Positive Obsession by Susanna Morris.
Great. I'm almost afraid to read it.
I found it inspiring.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. She's such a remarkable woman. And to know the details of how remarkable she is, loved it.
Great. Kat, thanks very much. Anne Holman, over to you.
I'm going to ask you a question first. Do you remember The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald? And I'm sorry, but I'm going to put that earworm in there right
now.
Just did it.
I'm sorry. But when do you think that happened? Because when I listened to that song, I thought, oh, you know, 1870, 1975. This is probably our best-selling book right now. It's called The Gales of November, The Untold Story of the Edmund Fitzgerald by John U. Bacon. And he was able to interview many of the survivors, family survivors. Yeah. Nobody on the ship. All 29 people perished. Lots of pictures, lots of interesting information, fascinating information about the Great Lakes and how dangerous they are, how much more dangerous than the ocean they are. Loved it. And this is, we're having a hard time keeping that one in stock.
Say the name again.
It's called The Gales of November, The Untold Story of the Edmund Fitzgerald. I'd sing it for you, but you'd probably rather I didn't.
People have it in their minds, so yes.
I know you can't see this face on the radio, but this is called Devouring Time.
This
Jim
is the
Harrison,
greatest photo of any writer of any.
Yes.
It's
he
Jim,
looks like an oak tree. He
this
looks
is Jim
like
Harrison.
An oak tree.
Yes.
And in homage to Betsy, I just have to say the one time he came to visit us, he made her cry, which is so Jim Harrison. She was driving him up, picked him up at the airport and driving him up to the U, and they got a little bit lost. Because who doesn't get lost at the University of Utah?
Yeah.
And he really ripped into her. So we have a love-hate relationship with him. But, gosh, it's an interesting book. And his friendship with John McGuane, Tom McGuane, especially in here, is just fascinating. Todd Goddard is the author. He's a professor at Utah Valley University. It's Devouring Time, Jim Harrison, A Writer's Life.
Devouring is the right word, too, because he loved food.
Oh, The stuff about the food is so, so good.
Yeah.
So, so good. And then The Key to Everything, Mae Swenson, A Writer's Life, by Margaret Bruchia. I have always been fascinated with Mae Swenson. I think she was, you know, a young girl from Logan. She went to New York City, and she did look back. She came home all the time. And,
yeah. World-class poet.
Still a world-class poet and still embraced that life in New York and everything about it. And this was a really, really good bio of her. It's The Key to Everything, Mae Swenson, A Writer's Life. She was the oldest of 7 or 8 siblings, and I just thought it was terrific. I love books about food, and this is called The Heart-Shaped Tin, Love, Loss, and Kitchen Objects by Bea Wilson. The story starts when she's walking through her kitchen and she knocks a heart-shaped pan off of her shelf. It falls on the ground, and it is, in fact, the pan that she baked her wedding cake in, and her marriage is falling apart. So she starts writing about this tin, and then she goes from there and she writes more essays about cooking and exactly what the title says, love, loss, and kitchen objects. I just think there's so much to be learned from cooking and talking to an audience while you're cooking or talking about what you're cooking. And then I just have a couple minutes left, but I have to mention David Borgenick's new book is tiny. It's a little tiny pocket worst case scenario guide to retirement. And I think it's tiny because who's going to retire? None of us can retire anymore. David Borgenick is and always has been just one of the funniest people I know. And one of the things he talks about in here is you got to get your kids to move out. How do you get your grown child to move out?
Oh, man.
Do not cook their meals. Do not do their laundry. Do not pay their bills and raise the rent. It's a handy little pocketbook.
Worst case
That's
scenario.
The worst case scenario pocket guide, Retirement by David Borgenick.
It's Anne Holman, the newest edition of our group of book experts. She's the co-owner of the King's English Bookshop at 15th and 15th neighborhood of Salt Lake City, here with Catherine Weller of Weller Bookworks in Trolley Square. Ken Sanders of Ken Sanders Rare Books in the old library building on Library Square in Salt Lake City. We have a list of all of the books, even the ones we didn't have time for, on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. This is Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from our members. Find out how at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We're talking about books today with our group of experts, booksellers and readers. They're with us to help you decide which books to give for the holiday. One of Catherine Weller's favorites for the year is a book that's not a novel or a thriller. It's a diary from the poet and essayist Philip Connors.
He is a fire lookout in the Gila Range, and he transports us all not just to his tower, but to his world. His newest book, The Mountain Knows the Mountain, is set up like a haibun, which is a Japanese form of writing that intermingles haiku with prose and generally describes a journey. And this book is about returning to his mountain after having been a year away.
It is strange and a little miraculous to be a fire lookout in the 21st century. Some days it feels almost illicit sitting here getting paid to look out the window. We really ought to have been retired by now in a culture as omnivorous and remorseless as ours. Isn't there an app for that? I can hear the incredulous voice say. A satellite? A super-duper camera? Something? Just be patient. In due time, the techno-fetishists will usher us into obsolescence.
Phil is cranky. He is a cranky author. At the same time, he's kind of that crusty hard roll guy. He's crusty on the outside and very soft on the inside.
Give us just a few more years gawking at cloud shapes, communing with birds. Wait, maybe another decade or two, until all that remains of the post-Pleistocene forests has burned in the western United States. Then the gizmos and the futurists can have it. And the last of us can be wheeled into a home for aged and infirm lookouts, where we can swap stories of the olden days before the last of the American wildlands were completely rationalized under the gaze of a cold, impassive, all-seeing eye. 15 seasons in, wondering what will doom me, my knees or a drone.
And you can see how he mourns the loss of the natural world, how he mourns the loss of the ability of all of us to have time to contemplate, to see things. And at the same time, you can see his sneaky little subversive and sometimes ribald humor that comes out throughout this book, in addition to the little haikus that he's composed, like that haiku at the end about what's going to cause him to have to retire as a firefighter.
Catherine Weller talking about Philip Connors' book, The Mountain Knows the Mountain, A Fire Watch Diary. Catherine is with us along with Ken Sanders and Ann Holman, and we're on to round three, children's books. Ann Holman.
My favorite book of the year is called The Tree of Life.
Wait, favorite of all?
Well, like, okay, of kids' books.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
All right. That's a thing.
That's a big caveat.
That's
a big,
well, still, that's amazing.
You know, my heart lives in the kids' room.
Does it?
Yeah. No apologies. This is The Tree of Life, a lift-the-flap book about the amazing animals that live in trees around the world. What's remarkable about this is it's written by Nalini Nadkarni, who's emeritus professor at the U and has spent I don't know how many years living in the trees. Might still be. I don't know. I don't know what she's spending her time on now. But it's a giant, oversized book, and it has trees, but then it has the animals and everything that live in them, and it's all lift the flap. So it's even, you know, a three-year-old who can sit and pay attention, but I'm up to an adult. It's just giant, eucalyptus, baobab, everything. I love this book so much. I love her so much. She's written so many interesting books, but now she's writing for the little ones. So that's The Tree of Life by Nalini Nadkarni, illustrated by Kendra Binney. I brought a few Christmas books, but I want to focus on my favorite, and this is called The Book of Candles, Eight Poems for Hanukkah. I like books that are just simple, and this is just a short poem on every page. The fourth night, on Shabbat, the sky is still winter blue when Hanukkah rushes the room. Dinner is ready, but you aren't quite, when Mama calls out, "Come on, Sugar Pop, time to nosh." So you set down your snake and hammer. You come on, Sugar Pop. Just darling, darling, darling.
Say the name again.
Okay, this is The Book of Candles, Eight Poems for Hanukkah, and it's by Laurel Snyder. And then a picture book called While We Wait by B. Johnson. This is just a straightforward picture book, and it's about two sisters and their mom. They're waiting for their dad to come home, and it's how they spend their day. Really simple. Stamps and boxes, velvet ropes, paper tubes, and envelopes. And it's a picture of them waiting at the post office. Forms to fill and cards to send. While we wait, we make a friend. It just reminds me of growing up with my sister, and I have two daughters, and I think with picture books, sometimes great illustrations and simple prose is the best way to do it. And then I want to talk about Jennifer Nielsen. She is the children's laureate of the state of Utah right now, if I have that right. She's written so many books, lots of great fantasy, lots of great realistic fiction. This is the first book she's written that kind of mirrors her experience growing up. She had a hard life growing up. This is called The Free State of Jax. And Jax is taking his freedom into his own hands. This is a story about a boy who's being raised by his aunt and uncle, and they are awful, just awful. They treat him terribly. Their kids are mean to him. He has no parents. It's awful. One day, he rows out into the middle of the creek that divides their property from this man who is grumpy, and he doesn't come back. And they start screaming at him, and he says, "No, I've declared my own country. I'm going to live in the middle of this creek until you become nicer to me or things become better." Well, the grumpy old man on the other side, you would think, would want him to row back to his side too. But no, the grumpy old man takes his position. And it's what happens as a young person when you take a stand and say, you know what, you can't do this to me anymore. I'm going to live my own life and try and make things better. So this is The Free State of Jax. Jax is taking his freedom into his own hands, and that's by Jennifer Nielsen. She has a new one coming in the new year about the San Francisco earthquake. That's going to be really fun, too. Wow.
Ann, thanks very much. Ken Sanders, over to you.
Doug, you know, Ann brought up the illustrations in the books, and I got to tell you, as a child, the art was my gateway drug into books. I read the Rubaiyat and many other books at very early ages, Arabian Nights, because of the Edmund Dulac, the Maxwell Parrish, the artwork. I ate the Oz books up, all 40 of them, because of the John O'Neill artwork. And speaking of simple books, I've got three. They're kind of 4 to 8, you know, young readers. They're pretty simple, basic books. But in today's world, they're books we need. A kid's book about banned books. Boy, they could have had a better author. The National Coalition Against Censorship. They should have picked a pseudonym, I think. And I just want to read one page. A book ban is when a book is taken out of a library or school because someone, usually not a teacher or librarian, says they don't think it's right for kids. When someone tells a librarian or teacher that they can't let kids read certain books because they personally don't believe kids should read them. Book ban.
Girls, so a kid's book about banned books. Okay.
Girls on the Rise by the youngest poet to ever do a presidential inauguration, Amanda Gorman. Again, three girls, and I want to read one page from it. We are beautiful not because of how we may appear, but how we look straight into the face of fear. And lastly, Prisons Must Fall. It's really, really fun artwork. Basic concepts, but this is the page that struck me, and we've got some great, pretty sure those are made-up constellations in the stars there, not any that I recognize at any rate, and the phrase, a locked and lonely cell is not where we belong. How can harming someone teach that causing harm is wrong? And lastly, you knew I was going to do this, Doug. I'm back to Guillermo del Toro and his famous Pinocchio book, My New Best Friend. So they've reissued all of these tormos from, not that they're kids, but Pan Lamath, Shape of Water, Cabinet of Curiosities, on and on, in these big formats. They're $50-$60 a piece. They're just beautifully illustrated about the makings of the movie and these great stories. And like Frankenstein, Guillermo has done this into this, not as monstrously huge as Frankenstein, but a gigantic box set. And with it, this limited edition that comes with a maquette, not a puppet, this carved wooden, about 12-inch tall Pinocchio puppet that comes in this big elaborate box with the book and a whole bunch of other goodies in these handmade boxes that are marvels of engineering. Can't get enough of Guillermo del Toro and Pinocchio.
Great. All right, Catherine.
All right, I'm going to start with a picture book as well. Lillian Cho is the author of Don't Eat Eustace. And Eustace is a fish. Bear lives out in a lighthouse. He's a lonely guy. He just hangs out there and he catches his food every day. And one day he catches Eustace. And Eustace is intended to be lunch, but Eustace doesn't want to be lunch. He's got a girlfriend. You know, he's got stuff to do. And he's got skills. So in this book, he starts by letting the bear know maybe he should knit a sweater for himself because he looks kind of cold. And they just evolve through this relationship building so that Eustace can keep himself alive and out of the soup pot. Don't Eat Eustace by Lillian Cho.
Great.
Completely different in tone is If You Make a Call on a Banana Phone. And, you know, we all love ring, 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 banana phone. This is by Gideon Stirrer. And it really does start with, if you make a call on a banana phone somewhere deep in the jungle, a gorilla will probably answer. And then from there, we can learn about the conversations that you could possibly have with a
gorilla.
On a banana phone. So, pretty awesome. Next is a kid's... I wouldn't quite call it manga or graphic novel. It's comic book than feeling by one of my favorite early Afrofuturists, early meaning 2000s, Nnedi Okorafor. It's called The Space Cat. And this is about a cat named Periwinkle who lives in a house, but Periwinkle also has a spaceship. And as cats do
as
at night,
do. Yeah.
He has adventures in his spaceship. Nnedi Okorafor is just such a stunning writer of adult fantasy, and this book is stunning and lovely in its own way. The illustrations are a little bit edgy, but it's a great book to read through about a black family and a cat with his own agendas. None of those exist, right?
The Space Cat.
Yes, Space Cat, Nnedi Okorafor. Lastly is a book by Jessica Walter. This is for our, 8 to 12 set called The Secret Astronomers. No, I'm lying. This would be, I'm going to say, 12 and up. This is an epistolatory novel that takes a slightly different form because two strangers are writing to each other by putting notes inside of a book.
Wow.
And they answer one another.
Like post-it notes in here, right?
Yeah, the layout really cool. of this book is really cool and non-traditional. You've got to see it to believe it because it's got like post-it notes or little notes that they pasted in over what this existing book is. And there are all the kid kind of inside jokes. There's a mystery to solve that's decades old. You really get swept into this. It's a fun, fun book. And it's called The Secret Astronomers by Jessica Walker.
Cat, great.
And don't do that for real. Post-it books in the books. Over time, that glue is not healthy.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Spoken like a bookseller. All right, let's do a lightning round. We're going to throw a few minutes on the timer here and... see how many books we can get through. Kat, you begin.
All right. Mary Roach has a new one. This is the first book I read when I was convalescing.
Wow.
Replaceable You, Adventures in Human Anatomy. Think artificial penises, artificial legs, artificial hair. You got it all with Mary Roach, of course.
Yeah, she's great. All right. Anne.
Living in the Present with John Prine by Tom Piazza. It's really a conversation between two friends, which makes it, for a musical memoir, very readable. I was so sad when we lost John Prine, and I'm so happy to have this memoir about him. Living in the Present with John Prine by Tom Piazza.
Ken.
Big, beautiful coffee table photo book by a whole herd full of photographers, Alta and Little Cottonwood Canyon, Jewel of the Wasatch. Stunningly beautiful, great Christmas present.
Great idea.
Identification: Why Everything Suddenly Got Worse and What to Do About It by Cory Doctorow.
And...
Beer Hiking Southern Rockies. 54 hikes and microbreweries in Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah by Yitka Nguyen.
Offbeat Craig Childs, The Wild Dark Fighting the Night Sky in the Age of Light.
You Are the Detective, The Creeping Hand Murder.
Jane Austen for Every Day of the Year by Tara Richardson.
Encountering Dragonfly, Notes on the Practice of Reenchantment, Brooke Williams. A whole book that came out of a dream about a dragonfly. Meditations on the Wild World.
All right, that's Ken Sanders of Ken Sanders Rare Books. They're in the old library building on Library Square in Salt Lake City. Catherine Weller with Weller Bookworks in Trolley Square. And Holman, well done. Thanks.
Hey,
thanks
you.
For joining us. Co-owner of the King's English Bookshop on 15th and 15th in Salt Lake City. Thank you all. We have a complete list of all the books we discussed today, even the ones we didn't get to. You can find them on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're on YouTube at KUER90.1. You can email us at radiowest@KUER.org. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.